This meeting of the House Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. It is 3:33, not Thursday, it's Saturday, April 10th, 2021, in Capitol Room 124. Members present in the room are Representative Prox, Representative Sponholz, Representative Zokuski, co-chair, and myself. I do not see any other members on Teams just yet. Okay, I would like to thank our House Records staff, Martha Moore, and LIO staff, Kelsey Riker, for moderating today's meeting and making this meeting possible. Please let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Also, please take your time, take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. I thank you ahead of time for that. Last week, we had confirmation hearings on the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and some of the appointees to the State Medical Board. Today, we'll be doing confirmation hearings for the remaining appointees to the State Medical Board. I'll then open up public testimony for the State Medical Board appointees. The last time we addressed the State Medical Board appointees, I gave a brief overview of the expectations of that board, and I'll do the same thing here quickly. So in looking at the summary here, the governor shall appoint a board of medical examiners to be known as the State Medical Board, consisting of five physicians licensed in the state and residing in as many separate geographical areas of the state as possible. One physician assistant licensed under AS08.64.107, and two persons with no direct financial interest in the healthcare industry. Duties include, but are not limited to, examining and issuing licenses to applicants, developing written guidelines to ensure that licensing requirements are not unreasonably burdensome, imposing disciplinary sanctions on persons who violate the regulations and orders of the board, and adopt regulations ensuring that renewal of licenses are contingent on proof of continued competency on the part of the licensee. Once public testimony is done today, it is my intent to move all appointees' names forward for consideration in joint session. Please remember that moving names forward does not reflect the intent of how any member on this committee will vote during the joint session. Do we have any questions from the members before we begin? And I would like to note that we have Representative Kirka joining us on Teams. He may have been on a minute or two. It is now 3:36. We will begin with Dr. Steve Parker, if we have him on the line. Mr. Parker, are you online? Or, excuse me, Dr. Parker, are you online?
Yes.
Thank you. If you would please introduce yourself for the record and explain why you are qualified and interested in serving on this board.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Steve Parker. I'm a private physician working in Palmer for about the past 12 years. My medical training was at the Michigan State University College of Human Medicine. I served in the military for about 10 years and had my family medicine residency at Fort Bragg. Since then, I've worked as an employed as well as solo physician, a hospitalist, and a medical director for a nursing home. Until recently, I did full-spectrum family practice with obstetrics. During my career, I have served on many committees to include peer review. My desire to be involved with the medical board stemmed from an interest in protecting patients from poor practices, helping other physicians improve their practices, and protect my colleagues from bureaucratic overreach. Without a reasoned and measured response, we can make Alaska an undesirable place for the very specialists that we so desperately need. I bring several benefits to the medical board. I have exposure to medicine at various levels. I have served on many committees with very similar goals to the medical board, and currently I've had already 1 year experience with the medical board. So I thank you for hearing my introduction, and I will entertain questions if there are any.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Do any committee members have questions? Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair. For Chair Snyder. Dr. Parker, did I understand you've been serving on the medical board for about a year?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I don't really know that much about the board, but they oversee other physicians, disciplinary hearings and all of that. Have you been involved in any of those hearings?
Yes, sir.
And I guess what are the qualities that we're looking for somebody on that board?
I beg your pardon. What typically happens is that someone will complain about a situation in their medical experience, and they will present that complaint to the medical board. It will be investigated, and then we will review it and see if they meet the standards based on our regulations or the regulatory body of the medical board. And if they are meeting all those standards, then we would just end the case. We would just close it. If they do not meet those standards, we would try to find any appropriate disciplinary measure, usually based off of some precedent.
Okay.
Follow up?
Helps me out. Thank you.
Representative Spanholz.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Parker, through the chair, do you own or just work for Coho Family Medicine?
That's my private business.
Okay. So follow up.
Okay.
Think that Coho Medicine has sponsored Alaska Right to Life at various points in time. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm presuming then that you're personally anti-abortion.
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay.
I'd be personally anti-abortion.
All right, follow up. Okay. So Alaska has a pretty clear privacy clause, which guarantees the right to safe and legal abortion in the state of Alaska. Are you comfortable separating your personal beliefs about abortion from your responsibility as a state medical board member to ensure that regulations around abortion continue to maintain its safe and legal access in the state?
Yes, I would. My personal views would not affect whether I thought something was appropriate or inappropriate. Does that make sense? It's not my decision. It would not be my place to say whether it was moral or immoral, but whether they acted professionally.
Follow up. I think maybe it's not just did they act professionally, but did they act legally, I think is the most important standard. Would you agree?
I would agree, yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any additional questions? Co-Chair Zolkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Parker, we heard quite a bit in previous testimony from other members of the State Medical Board, the significant burden of time that the Medical Board was required to convene over 2020 as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we are seeing data that supports suggestion that there continues to be widespread COVID-19 transmission throughout the Matsu Valley. In your medical practice, are you able to balance the required time for this public service alongside your private commitments?
So far, I have. I think our commitment has declined significantly. Early on, we were having almost weekly meetings. But I think a lot of the issues that were coming up are now taken care of. And so I think there'll be, in the future, even with more COVID issues arising, it should be easier to work through that.
Follow up? Okay. Dr. Parker, this is Chair Snyder with a question. A moment ago in your introduction, you mentioned part of your interest in serving on the State Medical Board had to do with your interest regarding protections from bureaucratic overreach. I'm curious, in your time thus far on the board, have you addressed such situations, or are there specific issues of bureaucratic overreach that are of greatest interest?
I think one of the, I view the medical board as one of the most dangerous things to a doctor's career, that you have to be very careful before you do any type of disciplinary action or even a letter of advisement, because those things add huge hurdles to physicians later on. And then those things can potentially snowball. If you don't mind, I can give you an example. For instance, if you get a non-disciplinary action, and then 10 years down the line you forget you had this non-disciplinary action, that can turn into a disciplinary action in the future. So even though the board at that time didn't think you were doing anything wrong, they just give you a letter of advisement, then you can get disciplinary action down the road, which could potentially be very damaging to your career. So again, if you have, so you have to be very careful that anything you do to a physician is not going to, if it's not going to have a significant benefit to that physician or protect patients, you try not to do anything, because the burden on a physician can snowball, and no one wants to work in a state where you have this unnecessary burden that snowballs on you. Does that make sense?
I'm gonna ponder that for just a moment, and I think I have another question from Representative Spanholtz. Thank you, Dr. Parker.
Yeah, I guess I sort of want to follow up on that, and I'm interested in, I mean, I imagine that there'll be maybe some more questions on this topic. I understand the concern about the impact that state medical board decisions, even informal decisions, can have on somebody's career. The state medical board has an obligation to ensure that physicians are, adhering to licensing requirements, and that they are safe and acting in the public's best interest. There's been some well-documented examples of physicians who have not adhered to best practices, and it's been very dangerous for the state. And I think some examples are, folks that were over-prescribing opioids, which contributed to opioid abuse in the state of Alaska. Can you describe, the kinds of things that you think are appropriate for the state medical board to take action on?
Yes. Clearly, if people are not prescribing, or not having good care with their opioid prescribing, that's a huge issue. If people are having serial complications of surgery that is related to not having proper technique, those kind of things are very actionable. My concerns are more along the line of more of a paperwork issues, where there's no benefit to the patient yet. Potentially significant harm to the physician's career, if there are patients being harmed, or if there's potential for patient harm, then those are the things I would strongly encourage action on.
And could you give us an example of paperwork issues that have no impact on patient care that you that maybe the state medical board has identified in the past that concern you?
Yes. One of the biggest issues we have right now with the state medical board would be doctors registering for the PDMP. Mm-hmm. So literally you have about 50% of the physicians not registering for PDMP. And so based on that, you could literally discipline half the doctors in the state. Some which prescribe very little or no opiates. So the doctors who are going to be registered with PDMP are probably doctors who prescribe opiates probably multiple times on a daily basis. So I believe that you potentially could be disciplining doctors who very rarely prescribe opiates and are not likely to be the cause or the problem related to opiates, potentially harming their careers and without really any significant benefit to patient care, patient safety.
Follow up.
Is that a good?
So the legislature felt strongly enough about the issue of opioid prescription and overprescription that we passed several pieces of legislation, mostly in 2016 and 2017, that were that were designed to try to reduce the prescription and increase tracking of opioid prescription in the state of Alaska. And are you suggesting that participation in a legal, you know, a state required PDMP is not a serious, you know, that's not a serious thing that we want to make sure that is being enforced?
Well, I do believe it's a serious thing. I use the PDMP all the time, and I agree it's a very good tool. Do you want to enforce that? Well, 50% of your doctors approximately in Alaska are not interested or not registering. Do you want to enforce that on 50% of the doctors in Alaska?
Follow up. So what would you deem as appropriate remedy for people not participating in a state-required prescription drug monitoring database?
The best remedy is to show them it's actually a useful program.
So we should have to persuade people that they should follow the law?
I guess so, because they're not. Again, I am registered with the PDMP. I'm using it every time. So I am not in any way justifying what these people are doing. But I will tell you, if you were in a clinic, a very busy clinic, and this adds another 2 to 3 minutes for each prescription you write, and you have limited staffing, it may make it almost impossible to see patients in a timely manner. So I was reviewing the people who had given information on that project, and I saw that there was very few physicians, so you may have not gotten enough information from the people who are on the ground in the trenches actually seeing these patients. Because you may have gotten better information on how to get physicians involved.
Follow up. So I think that we actually added some flexibility to the PDMP to allow you to delegate data entry into the PDMP from to other staff that work for you in your office. If you have suggestions about how to make the PDMP process, compliance process, you know, more streamlined, I think that that's really valid, but I'm really concerned by the suggestion that we wouldn't enforce participating in the prescription drug monitoring program, which the legislature felt very strongly was a need for this program to exist in the first place. And I guess I just find it deeply concerning that you would suggest that following the law in this particular example is optional.
I don't think I said that.
I think you said that we shouldn't enforce it.
That I've suggested that there's 50% of physicians. What I'm saying is if you were to follow that by rote, you would potentially you'd have to take out 50% of the physicians working in Alaska.
I'm going to hop in here. Please finish your thought, Dr. Parker.
So, again, it's there. Anytime you again, I know I'm speaking to the choir, but anytime you have legislation, the unintended consequences have got to be thought of, and this is potentially a very significant unintended consequence. So, I have presented several times at the medical board options for making the PDMP easier or less burdensome. Right now, it is, I would say it's a significant burden if you're writing any amount of opioid prescriptions. And it's also burdensome to enroll in it. It's confusing. There's a lot of issues with renewing it. So it is far from a perfect situation.
Dr. Parker, this is Chair Snyder. Continuing along that line of thinking, mm-hmm. It sounds like you've identified some challenges with the PDMP system.
Yes.
As someone sitting on the medical board, how would you communicate those concerns? To whom would you communicate those concerns? And what would you like to see the outcome be? Understanding and acknowledging that this is a problem, that we do have law that is apparently not being followed by nearly 50% of our physicians. There is some identification of challenges to an as yet imperfect system, but we do need to make sure that our state board of medical examiners are here to ensure that our licensees are following the laws. So at this point in the game, what would your recommendations be and how would you act sitting on the board to address this problem?
Well, I have attempted myself to make it so the PDMP was integrated with my own electronic health record in my clinic so that it would immediately pop up once I open an opioid prescription for a patient. I've contacted the company that the state works with, and right now, right off the top of my head, I don't remember the name of the company, and I've had no success getting through to them. I do know that certain people have that option. So if it was integrated into electronic health records where it was a situation where it just pops up automatically, that's where you should be. That's where the state might want to be interacting with electronic health records to make this happen. Because again, the best way to ensure that the doctor is checking it is to absolutely force him to do it. Again, in a busy clinic, you're gonna miss, even if you're on registered, you're gonna miss from time to time. That's just the reality. Other things, the renewal process is very weird. It's different from the licensing process. So it's a whole different process, a whole different a set of money you have to send in. So we've talked repeatedly about getting that integrated. So the registration is automatic with your medical license. So you can't do one without the other. And that, again, the only way to really make this happen is to make it automatic and make it automatic through your electronic health records. Because otherwise, it's just another difficulty, another thing you have to push through when you may have somebody coding next door to you or multiple other things going on around you. So if it's automatic, it's done. If it's not automatic, you will lose a lot of people and you'll lose a lot of unchecked scripts.
Thank you for that, Dr. Parker. So I'm looking, I have a question. Next will come from Co-Chair Zolkuski. I see Representative Kirka also has his hand up. I'll ask you to speak next. Do we have additional questions from the committee to put in? Representative Prox will go third in the queue. Co-Chair Zolkuski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Parker. I want to tease out a little bit more information as to better understand your position. I appreciate your certainly your experience and perspective in the field with regard to the PDMP and the paperwork issues, if you will, as an example of items that you would feel are maybe not as severe or concerning as other more immediate issues with respect to licensees to practice medicine in the state of Alaska. I guess my question would be to drill down a bit more directly to my colleagues' questions, is that the board is responsible for the licensing regulation and discipline of healthcare providers in the state of Alaska, not necessarily the policy setting that Representative Sponholz had referred to. Are you able to separate your ideology with respect to positions on how things may or may not be working to uphold the laws within the state of Alaska as it relates to the practice of medicine in your role on the state medical board?
I guess I am having trouble following your question. Could you restate that?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
So the board is responsible for the licensing regulation and discipline of individuals who practice medicine in the state of Alaska. And while I respect your position on the policy improvements that can be made with an example of the PDMP, which could lead to paperwork issues of physicians that may come before the board, are you able to separate your ideology on these policy issues to uphold your responsibilities as a member of the state medical board?
Okay. And again, what do you perceive as my ideology?
Well, with respect, Dr. Parker, you'd mentioned that the challenge of the PDMP may not necessarily be something that, if it came as a disciplinary action before the board, is something that should be considered with respect to taking action on somebody who's licensed to practice medicine. And so my question is, your responsibility on the state medical board is to ensure that all of the state's laws are being upheld, and so I'm hoping to better understand your reference of maybe not holding somebody to laws that you might feel are problematic.
I would be very able to differentiate between my own personal views and doing what is required by regulation. In the big issue with the PDMP is that no one is complaining about people not being registered in PDMP. So it's not going to come to the board, typically. I mean, how many opiate users are going to go, well, my doctor didn't PDMP me at my visit? Again, the board is complaint-based. So when a patient complains, it's usually not about the fact that the doctor's checking them to make sure they are getting their opiates from only one place. So I don't think we have a good way of pulling out the physicians who are a problem with the PDMP. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. How are we gonna do that? How are we gonna say, hey, you 50%? Because again, the board is not designed to reach out and grab people. The complaint has got to come to the board.
That wasn't the question. That wasn't the question, but I appreciate your response. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. We'll go to Representative Kirka.
Thank you, Madam. Doctor for being willing to serve, and just to clarify what you're saying here about only half the doctors in the state, registering and reporting things that they're supposed to report by law. In years here, we're understanding the problem. Do you think, or would you say that those 50% that aren't complying, are they doing so because they're just they don't have time to, and they're only doing a few opioids, or are they just not doing opioid at all, and that's just not what they typically prescribe? They're not dealing with patient. And I have a follow up question.
Okay, let me check with Dr. Parker, Representative Kirka. The connection is not fabulous. Dr. Parker, were you able to hear enough of that question to clarify?
I think so. So, okay. In short, if you're a pain doctor, I am sure you're registered with the PDMP, and you probably have a number of staff who are taking care of you on a daily basis. You probably have an RN who is acting as your a delegate to provide all these forms for you right up front. So when you arrive, you walk in the room, the nurse is handing you your PDMP information, and you don't have to do anything extra. The people that you're probably going to get for the PDMP are probably family practice internal medicine who rarely prescribe opiates. And again, this is my perception. I don't have any studies or numbers on this, but I think you're going to hurt mostly primary care if you were to reach out and yank all those doctors out. So I would say probably mostly private physicians, solo practices, who don't have a lot of resources, who may be out in the bush or serving communities, smaller communities, rather than like a I'm sure a clinic, with a multi-specialty clinic, would have lots of staff. They'd crank out the PDMP stuff before the doctor even arrived, knowing that patient was coming in for a controlled substance. Does that answer the question?
I think so. And then my follow-up question through the chair is, so it sounds like you've identified maybe an issue that the committee was not aware of, where the legislature's plan to tackle the opioid crisis is not fully being implemented or not working in this context. Would you be willing to provide the committee with, I guess, some suggestions in writing at some point, or maybe consultation with the medical board in terms of trying to solve this particular piece of the problem in a way that would not be burdensome to doctors in a way that will be effective and help us get a handle on the opioid crisis?
Yeah. Again, I think the two options I just gave would be would remedy the whole issue. Number one, just make it impossible to get a medical license without also being registered with PDMP, and then some kind of requirement for electronic health records used in Alaska to automatically have the PDMP appear, the PDMP information appear once they open the controlled substance or script, or even every time you open their prescription part of their program. And that would make it impossible not to do the process. And at the same time, it would take away all that burden. So you'd be forced to look at it. It would be automatic and no burden. So when I was in the Army, every little bit there'd be someone who'd come in and say, "Hey, we got this new program we want you to do. You have to ask these five questions. It'll only take 1.3 minutes to do it. Very little time." But when you have 15 different groups telling you that they want to use your time, and your appointment is 15 minutes, you're already over your time taking care of all these other requirements before you even talk to the patient. And logging in.
Thank you, Dr. Parker.
Multiple times a day, it probably takes about a half hour of my day.
Thank you, Dr.
Parker. If I'm seeing a lot of patients of that nature.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Parker. I'm just trying to be cognizant of time. You've shared a lot of your time with us today, and we're hitting on some important points, and we do have a list of other appointees, but I know Representative Prox has a question for you, and we might end it there.
I think we're all circling on the same question, but am I understanding you correctly to say that you think that the regulation relative to this PDMP should be enforced, but on the other hand, you'd like an opportunity to improve the regulation process so it isn't a burden? Does that sound
absolutely
what you're thinking? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Parker. We will move on to our next appointee. So I'm looking at our list. A little disappointing, a couple of folks we were hoping would be joining us today are not in attendance or on the line today. So we will not be hearing from Ms. Sarah Hood, nor will we apparently be hearing from Larry Doherty. Next up, we will hear from Dr. Maria Freeman. Dr. Freeman, are you on the line? I see you. It looks to me as though you are on the line. Perhaps you.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Freeman. If you would please introduce yourself for the record and explain why you are qualified and interested in serving on this board.
Thank you. My name is Maria Freeman, and to the chair and to the legislative body, thank you for the opportunity to share my experiences. I have been a family medicine physician in Alaska for 27 years, the first 4 years in Barrow, then 7 years in Anchorage, and the last 16 years in the Mat-Su Valley area. I have a family medicine practice in Wasilla, and I have the privilege of caring for and serving many people, including Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE patients. For the past 5.5 years, or 5.5 years ago, I developed a medication-assisted treatment program for opioid use disorders and patients with dependency. I work at the Algonquin Interventional Pain Clinic, and I serve a patient population with great needs and difficulties. I have been involved with the Mat-Su Opioid Task Force, which is a multidisciplinary group to address the opioid issue, but have not been active in the past year due to COVID-19 restrictions. I am a believer and follower of Jesus Christ's teachings, and I'm an active member of Faith Bible Fellowship Church in Big Lake, and have been teaching adult women Sunday school class for the past 23 years. I share this with you because I teach so that I can learn. The medical board offers an opportunity to learn and to serve my community of Alaska. I joined the medical board upon invitation last year as a civic duty and an opportunity to serve in this great state of Alaska. I bring to the board over 30 years of medical practice and experience, and hopefully common sense. I joined the medical board some months after my colleagues, and I have learned so much about how the members interact and address the issues and concerns that have presented themselves. I have greatly appreciated the interaction with other interest groups, such as emergency medical services, paramedics, and the pharmacy board. On a personal note, I met my husband of 23 years in Barrow, and during this time helped him raise 3 children, who have now blessed us with 19 grandchildren, all who live out of state, and therefore I have time for the medical board duties. Thank you for your consideration. I appreciate your support, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Freeman. Do we have any questions from the committee? Well, it looks like, Representative Spanholtz.
All right, I think I might have a couple of questions for.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, you said that you are involved in doing medication-assisted treatment for a substance use disorder?
Correct.
And did you say that you're doing that via distance?
No, in person.
Okay. I think one of the things that what kind of medication-assisted treatment are you doing?
So currently we're using 2 medications primarily. One is called Suboxone, which is a partial opioid therapy, and the other one is Vivitrol, which is an opioid blocker or antagonist.
All right, super. How long have you been doing that work?
For the past at least 8 years, but 5.5 years with Algon Group.
All right, great. Another question?
Follow-up, yeah.
All right. So you, I think, said that you are a follower of Jesus Christ and sort of made a point of describing your religious values on the record here. And so I just want to touch base on a topic that I brought up with our previous appointee. Are you anti-abortion?
Yes. Okay. Personally, I am, yes.
Okay. So you're aware in the state of Alaska that we have a very strong right to privacy and that abortion is safe and legal in the state of Alaska?
Yes, I do know that.
All right, follow up?
Follow up.
Are you comfortable with separating your personal beliefs about abortion from your professional responsibility as a state medical board member to ensure that abortion continues to be legal and accessible in Alaska?
Yes, I do understand the statutes and regulations that have been in place.
All right, follow up?
Follow up.
So I just want to be clear, you're not interested in passing regulations to make it more difficult for women to get a safe and legal abortion in the state of Alaska?
Not unless it's brought up.
Not unless it's brought up. What does that mean?
Yeah. If this is a question that is presented itself, I will have certain beliefs that are my personal beliefs, but once again, I'm a representative of the medical board, and so I will be regulated by the medical board as opposed to my personal beliefs. I can separate the two.
Follow up. What my question is. If there were a regulation that were introduced that were designed to make it more difficult to provide abortions in Alaska, which is a legally and constitutionally required service in the state of Alaska, would you be able to separate your personal beliefs that abortion is wrong and vote against those regulations?
I believe I can.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Freeman. I'm not seeing any additional questions. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right, last we have Ms. Lydia Milkey. Ms. Milkey, and please correct me if I'm pronouncing your last name wrong and accept my apologies. If so, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. If you would please introduce yourself for the record and explain why you are qualified and interested in serving on this board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for your time today. My name is Lydia Milkey, and I am seeking confirmation as a public member to the Alaska State Medical Board. I was born and raised in Big Lake, where I still currently live. I've worked in tourism for a number of summers and spent 5 sessions working in the legislature. About a year and a half ago, I graduated with a bachelor's in business management. I decided to take a gap year to travel and spend time with family. But because of COVID, I wasn't able to travel like I wanted to. However, I was appointed to the medical board just over a year ago and was able to spend a significant amount of time learning about the board and what we do and really jumping into my role as a public member. We had weekly meetings for quite a while and met more than any other state board as the COVID pandemic began. We stayed on top of things and passed emergency regulations to make sure that we would have the positions needed to support Alaska during the pandemic. I'm currently working for the state in the Division of Community and Regional Affairs as a local government specialist. During my time in the legislature, I learned to do research, find solutions to problems, and communicate effectively with others. I enjoyed doing research on bills and learning and understanding the lawmaking process. I think that experience has really helped me on the flip side, on the regulating side of things. It's been fascinating being on the governing side, which the medical board does, with the licensing and regulations aspect. I bring to the medical board a younger voice and perspective to help balance things out. I do my research for meetings, and I'm not afraid to ask questions. I've learned a lot, and I know I will continue to learn however long I'm on the board. My family and I are consumers here in Alaska, and I'm excited for the opportunity to continue to serve and help ensure public safety. I would appreciate your support, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Milkey. Co-Chair Zolkowski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Mielke, for your service and your interest in this board. Can you speak to what motivated you to put your name forward?
Yeah, so I'm motivated by public service and the opportunity to bring a voice for the consumer. I've always been interested in the medical field, and I love learning. While I don't personally want to go into the field, I am someone who enjoys learning and serving Alaska, so I felt like this was a good fit. As a public member, I want to be an advocate and a voice for consumers. This past year has been a very rewarding experience, being able to be a part of making Alaska a great place, both for physicians and consumers.
Follow-up?
Thank you. In your comments, you mentioned you were interested in a public safety, approaching this work through a public safety lens. Can you speak to that a bit more?
Oh, yeah. So as a public member, you know, I do rely on my colleagues for their expertise on the more technical aspects, but I also want to ensure that, you know, public safety and consumers are protected. So, for example, a lot of times, you know, we'll be looking at a physician and I'll think, you know, is, first of all, are they, you know, following the statutes, what's happening there? And then I'll think, you know, how would I feel as a consumer, you know, as a consumer of the medical field? And so I want to make sure that I can protect other consumers and be a voice for them too.
Representative Props.
Thank you, Co-Chair Snyder. Ms. Mielke, I think I understood you to say you were appointed to the medical board about a year ago?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And so I was just wondering, I know you can't talk about individual cases, but I wonder if you have a sense for the types of cases that are coming, complaints, I suppose, that are coming before the medical board.
Through the chair, representative, we'll have complaints coming in, and in we have a really good investigative staff, and they'll kind of do a quick overview to see if anything's there, and then forward it on to the physicians on the board. Because I am a public member, I have more of a limited role in the disciplinary and complaint side of things, and so things will come up to the full board, but I have a much more limited input on them than the physician. We'll have some of them are frivolous complaints against physicians, but we make sure that we thoroughly investigate them all before taking any action or dismissing anything.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. At ease, just a moment. Ms. Mielke, you mentioned, seems one of your primary desires in serving on this board is to protect consumers, and I can appreciate that very much. If you would unpack that just a little bit further and maybe provide a couple specific examples of the types of protections you're looking for, if they've stemmed from things that you have heard from community members, Your commitment and mention of that multiple times makes me think that this is something you've been thinking about for some time or have encountered in your time on the board thus far, and it would be helpful to hear some specifics on that.
Yeah, to the chair, I'll give you one specific example. We'll have physicians sometimes that come up for, that apply to be licensed in Alaska, and a lot of times they'll bring a certain baggage with them, and so we thoroughly inspect their background, and sometimes they'll have certain things on their record, such as sometimes sexual allegations against them. And so as a consumer, I look at that, sometimes I think, you know, would I feel comfortable being attended to by this physician, or would I feel comfortable with my family, you know, seeing this physician? And a lot of times, sometimes the answer is no. And so, you know, I do weigh the regulations and the statutes and other things on their application as well. But that's one specific example where, you know, sometimes I'll say no, I can't approve this physician to be licensed in Alaska because, you know, I care about the safety of myself and other Alaskans, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with me or my family or my friends seeing this physician.
Thank you. We have a question from Rep. Sponholz next.
All right. Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Mielke. I just noticed that you are you're a state employee serving on a board, and I'm wondering, it seems atypical for that to be, and I'm wondering, did you get any guidance from the administration on whether or not that on the legality or whether or not there's any problems with the Ethics Act involved with a state employee serving on a state board? I know state employees can't run for office, for example. So did you get any legal opinions or guidance on that from Department of Law?
I have not heard of anything personally, no.
All right.
Ms. Mielke, forgive me. I'm looking at my notes here, and I am seeing two locations, and perhaps you said and I didn't make note. Are you located in Big Lake, or are you located in Anchorage?
I am in Big Lake.
Okay, thank you. I am not seeing any additional questions. So thank you for your time, Ms. Mielke.
Thank you so much.
Okay, do we have any questions from our committee members at this time before we move forward? Okay. So seeing and hearing none, I would like to now open up public testimony for appointees to the State Medical Board. However, I am looking and I am not seeing anyone on the line to provide public testimony, so we will close. So public testimony on these Alaska State Medical Board appointees, as I said, is now closed. Since we have now heard from almost all of our appointees, I am going to forward their names for consideration in joint session.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I typically believe that all of these names should move forward for consideration from joint session, but I'm curious if two of these individuals did not participate in a hearing in our committee, whether we should move forward in forwarding their names at this time. And those individuals being Sarah Bigelow Hood and Larry Doherty, since neither of them participated, I'm not sure I feel comfortable making a recommendation to joint session without having had an opportunity to hear from them in committee.
I concur with you, and that is my intent. I will not include those two names since we have not had the opportunity to hear from them and present questions to them. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So here we go. The House Health and Social Services Committee has reviewed the qualifications for the governor's appointees, whom I will read in just a moment, and recommends the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This includes Lydia Mielke for State Medical Board, Maria Freeman, State Medical Board, Steve Parker, State Medical Board, David Boswell, State Medical Board, Richard Ween, State Medical Board, Rhonda Boyles, Mental Health Trust Authority, Brent Fisher, Mental Health Trust Authority, Annette Gwalfney-Jones, Mental Health Trust Authority, and Anita Halterman, Mental Health Trust Authority. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation. So in wrap up, I'd like to thank you all for joining us on your Saturday to get important legislative work done. On Tuesday, 4:13, we will be hearing and holding public testimony on House Bill 168, Electronic Application for State Benefits, by Rep. Snyder. HB 103, Assisted Living Homes, House Rules by Request of the Governor, and SB 21, Licensed Mobile Intensive Care Paramedics by Senator Rivak. My Chief of Staff sent the documents out for these bills yesterday to our committee members on April 9th. Please let our office know if you'll be proposing any amendments as soon as you can. Otherwise, amendments will be due what will ultimately be 5 days after receipt of those documents on Wednesday, April 14th at 3 p.m. If it is the will of the committee, it is my intent to go over those amendments, then move these bills out on Thursday, 4:15. Following that, we will have initial hearings on House Bill 58, Contraceptives Coverage, Insured by Representative Klayman and HB 105, detention of minors by request of the governor. Amendments for those two, HB 58 and HB 105, will be due on Monday, 4/19 at 3 p.m. If members could please stay after adjourning to complete paperwork for the nominees, that would be greatly appreciated. The time is 4:29 p.m., and this hearing of the House Health and Social Services Committee is now adjourned.